Yeah, is that Tony Gambino?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, listen, let me just introduce you, Tony. My name's Greg Szymanski from the Investigative Journal. Eric Phelps is with us, and I'm sure you know Eric, but our listeners would want to know a little bit about you. You're the grandson of Lucky Luciano, and Lucky Luciano would bring the mafia into the modern age, putting the group into what is called organized crime. Out of the ruins of the Masseria and the Maranzano gangs would emerge the five families in New York. One of the most powerful would become known as the Gambino family. Tony, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about, let's start out with John F. Kennedy.
Can you speak up a little bit? I can't hear you.
Yeah. Let's start out with the John F. Kennedy assassination and what you know about it.
Well,
Eric,
why don't we just have Tony tell us about, you know, where he was born, how he was brought up, and his relationship to his grandfather first.
Go ahead, Tony.
I was born in Palermo, Sicily, in 1943. Mm-hmm. My mother, I don't know who she was, because she was married to another gentleman, but my grandfather ordered one of his daughters to have an affair with Carlos Thomas Gambino to bring him into the crime family and let him run the five crime families in New York.
Right.
And at the age of five, I became a made man by being branded by my grandfather's diamond ring in my left arm, in the middle of my arm, above my elbow,
mm-hmm.
and right below the muscle.
Right.
And I strictly worked underneath him and until I went to jail, and then he passed away.
Now, when did you come to the States?
What were the guns that you carried, Tony, and who did they belong to?
Huh?
What were the guns that you carried?
I was 13 years old, he gave me two P-38 German Lugers, and he told me I'd never leave the house without them, and they're my uniform.
Huh.
And what was one of them?
And one belonged to the General Rommel of the German Army, the Desert Fox, which was a very collector's piece, and it was worth a lot of money.
Wow.
And it had Rommel's name engraved on it, and it was all done with, it was nickel-plated, and it had silver and gold on it.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us, Tony, when did you come to the States?
That's Bill.
When did you come to the States?
I didn't hear you.
Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on a house phone, and I'm having a hard time trying to understand you. It's down real low or something.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'll talk loud until they turn it up in the studio, then let me know. When did you finally come to the States?
When did I finally what?
Come to the United States.
Oh, I came to the United States in 1949 for the first time.
Uh-huh. Tell us how you grew up on the streets and how your life progressed, and then we'll get into some of the specifics about Kennedy and also Marilyn Monroe and others, things you know about. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hang on. Could you hang on 1 second?
Okay. Eric, feel free to talk. He's having a hard time hearing me, and he's up all the way. We have him potted up all the way, so feel free to...
All right, go ahead. I'm on.
Okay. Tell us how you grew up on the streets, and then we'll get into some specifics about cases you know about. Go ahead.
You want me to tell you about my grandfather?
Yeah, and how? Just basically tell us how you grew up and what you understood about the mafia as you grew up in it. Go ahead.
Well, he made, at the age of 19...
You're talking to Tony Gambino. Go ahead, Tony.
At the age of 15 years old, I became a member of my grandfather's family, and he made me head of all the godfathers.
Right.
And I was a what they call a meeting organizer. Mm-hmm. And when a head of a family had a disagreement with the other family member of a different family, say like if Carlos Thomas Gambino had problems with Dominic DeLuca or Joey Genovese, I had to turn around and bring them to a meeting. Mm-hmm. And I had to get them to either agree, or if they didn't agree, then other steps had to be taken and somebody had to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Eric, do you have any questions? Go ahead.
Yes. Tell us more about Lucky Luciano and his influence in Hollywood, Tony.
Oh. Well, what he did was, if you seen Godfather 1 and you seen that prize horse's head being cut off and put in that producer's bed.
Right.
Well, stuff like that went on with a lot of the movie stars that he had took him under his wing, and he gave half them people in Hollywood, and he had to give them an offer they couldn't refuse, and that in the first Godfather, when that horse's head was put in that producer's bed, that was for Frank Sinatra to get his first leading part in motion pictures. Now, he took Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Clint Eastwood, Burt Reynolds, Esther Williams, Marilyn Monroe, Rita Hayworth, Humphrey Bogart, and a lot of others.
Mm.
And Tony Bennett, and Perry Como, and even Johnny Weissmuller.
Wow.
Tarzan, huh?
And he made them all movie stars, and he was getting a percentage off of them a month.
So Lucky was getting a percentage off all these stars that he put into Hollywood.
After he helped them to become stars, because Frank Sinatra was only a barroom singer. Mm-hmm. That's all he was. In Bohoker, New Jersey, he started off singing in bars. And then he took them out of the bars, he put them with the big bands. And then from the big bands, he went to grandfather, and he said that he would like to become a movie star, and he would like to get some leading parts. And he couldn't act for nothing. And they actually had to teach him how to act. After he got the leading part in that one motion picture that he had, and a horse's head got cut off for that.
So that was basically a true story that actually happened about Sinatra, correct?
That's correct. That's how Frank Sinatra got started.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to make other deals similar for Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Clint Eastwood, Burt Reynolds, you know. He gave them people... we call an offer they couldn't refuse.
Well, tell me, Tony, with Lucky Luciano with this kind of power in Hollywood, and why didn't
the
FBI come after him?
So was Kennedy involved with the movie theaters in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Mr. Kennedy himself.
Did the Mafia have a relationship with J. Edgar Hoover?
Yes, they did. J. Edgar Hoover, he was being paid off by the syndicate along with the members of the FBI and the CIA.
Hmm.
Just like, whether people want to believe it or not, in 9/11, President Bush and the CIA and the FBI... they're the ones that knocked down the Empire State. The Twin Towers.
Tell us what you know about that, Tony.
Huh?
Tell us what you know about the connections in 9/11. Go ahead.
Well, all the gold that was left in the United States, my grandfather's construction company built the Twin Towers.
Right.
Okay. And then they went back and did some underground work under the Twin Towers, where the gold in the United States and in other countries was put under the Twin Towers in a gold, in a concrete embankment.
Right.
At one time, you used to be able to go underneath the subway and get out of the subway and come up underneath the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
But that was eliminated. And all the gold that was left in this country was placed under the Twin Towers. And then the only way you can get that gold out from underneath there was to take the Twin Towers down. And if you look at the gold coin commercial, after Bush, President Bush got his hand on that gold, this is what Rosemary O'Donnell was trying to bring into the light, and they took her off the television. See? Because
yeah.
This is what she knew about the gold underneath the Twin Towers. And if you look at that television commercial, you'll see where it says gold coins made from the gold that was found underneath the Twin Towers. And that's the only reason why the Twin Towers were taken down, so he could get his hands on that gold. And as soon as he got his hands on that gold, he goes into Iraq. Bin Laden had nothing to do with it. In 1935. An Army airplane bomber hit the Empire State Building, which was a heavier and bigger plane, and it didn't knock the Empire State Building down. All high-rise buildings are made to be struck by airplanes.
So you have inside information that these guys, Bush included, tell us more how they knew about 9/11 prior to it happening and also organized it.
Yeah, let's put it to you this way.
Yeah.
If you were a terrorist pilot, mm-hmm. okay, and you made it to Washington, D.C., and you were supposed to hit the White House, why would you fly a plane into the Pentagon if you were supposed to hit the White House?
Right.
Okay. Then up in Somerset, they said that plane turned around and it was supposed to, that's the one that was supposed to hit the White House.
Right.
If you look at the records of that plane was scattered in a 100-mile radius. If a plane is going to crash, it's going to stay at the crash site. It's not going to be blown up and spread out in a 100-mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
That plane was shot down by a fighter jet's missile.
Mm-hmm.
They shot that plane down.
Right. What do you know about the connections between our government, the mob, the Vatican, all of their complicity in 9/11? Do you think they all worked together to bring this about?
You better believe they do. And the Vatican is the headquarters. The Vatican is the headquarters for that.
And how do you know that?
Do the Mafia Dons all know that?
Huh?
Do the Mafia Dons all know that?
Yes, they do. It was the Pope who got my grandfather to hang Mussolini upside down in the square and had people rock him. And if a person didn't throw the rock, my grandfather had his men there to order them to shoot anybody who he handed a rock to didn't throw the rock.
Now, I think anybody who doesn't think the Vatican is involved with the mob and also with our government intelligence agencies ought to listen again to what Tony said.
Well, the Vatican wasn't corrupt. You think they would let these priests rape these boys and get away with it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, does the Archbishop of Palermo control the mafia families there?
Yes, they do.
So, therefore, the Vatican's control in control of the heroin drug trade.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. And you know what? Let's talk a little bit, Eric. You have done so much research on the Kennedy assassination. Why don't you ask Tony some questions that come to mind about his knowledge of how that really happened.
Okay. Were you in Dallas that day, Tony, when that happened?
I was in Dallas that day.
Mm-hmm. And the where do you feel the final fatal headshot came from?
The headshot that killed Kennedy came from a hitman who was placed in the storm drain.
I read that Johnny Roselli was that hitman. Does that ring a bell to you?
That is correct.
The same guy who did the shooting.
And if you would look the films of that over, you'll see that all his bodyguards stayed away from that car because they knew it was going down. Once the first shot was fired, what are they supposed to do? They were supposed to make a body wall to protect the president. Not one person went near that coach. And the guy had the chance to kill him, sure. And if you would have watched that film, you'll see the guy come out of the storm grain, walk across a green field over there, and got in a car. The guy drove him away.
Outside of Roselli, who else was involved in that hit team? And what were you doing in Dallas then?
Huh?
Who else was involved in that hit team, to the best of your knowledge?
Who was involved?
Yeah.
Frank Sinatra was involved.
You mean Frank Sturgis?
Huh?
Frank Sturgis, you mean?
That's right. And Frank Sinatra was involved, too, because he's the one that caused that. Because he introduced Marilyn Monroe to the Kennedy brothers, John and Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And Marilyn Monroe got pregnant by the Kennedys. And she was going to call Jacqueline Kennedy and Robert Kennedy's wife to let them know that she had an affair with their husbands and neither one of them two got her pregnant. And the Kennedys are the ones who killed Marilyn Monroe. And Frank Sinatra introduced Marilyn Monroe to Jack Kennedy at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turned around.
Sorry.
Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after that happened, my grandfather, you remember when Frank Sinatra's son got kidnapped?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
My grandfather had him kidnapped, and he gave the sands to Frank Sinatra in Vegas because at one time he was the biggest star in Vegas. But then after this happened, Wayne Newton came into the picture, and Wayne Newton became a bigger star in Vegas than Frank Sinatra. And he took the sands back off of Frank Sinatra and made Frank Sinatra pay all that ransom money for his son because of the death of Marilyn Monroe. Hmm. Because he was still making a lot of money by Frank Sinatra being a movie star and singing and records.
Do you know who they hired to kill Marilyn Monroe? Is that something you were privy to?
They gave Marilyn Monroe them drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They did it themselves, just like Edward Kennedy.
Okay.
Just like Edward Kennedy. He took that girl up on Cape Cod, right, and up in the Nianas.
Very joke.
For some ungodly reason, he put a .22 round through that girl's head. And that's what killed that girl, was the bullet that he put in that girl's head.
So Ed Kennedy shot her. I've heard that before from the coroner, yeah. That's interesting.
Right. And that's where the blood came on her dress and stuff. It mm-hmm. came from the head. After that .22 round went through her back of her neck and into her brain. That's
right.
What killed her. And then Edward Kennedy stepped out of that car. He jacked up the gas pedal, and he kicked that gear in car with a stick. And let that car go over the cliff with that girl in it. He never went over that cliff, and he never jumped out of it, and he never rolled out of that car.
Tony, stay on the line. We're going to take a 3-minute break, then we'll be back with Tony Gambino and also Eric John Phelps on the Investigative Journal. Back in 3 minutes.
Too many.
Okay, we're back on the Investigative Journal. My guests are Tony Gambino of the infamous Gambino crime family in New York, and also Eric John Phelps, author of Vatican Assassins. We're discussing how the Vatican, how our government, the international intelligence agencies, and the mafia all work together in various activities in our country, how they've had a foothold in Hollywood, how actually Jack Kennedy was killed, and also how Marilyn Monroe met her demise. Tony, when you grow up in the crime family, do you feel you are basically protected by our CIA, protected by top Vatican officials, and also, in a sense, working for them? What goes through your mind when you're doing things on the street? Is that something that you understand as you grow up in the crime family?
Yes, you explain all this, you know, and it all goes under your code, your honor, respect, and yes, and everything around it is we were well protected because of the Vatican, the FBI, the CIA, and the United States government. You know what I mean? Its government was making money because my grandfather was making money. Al Capone was making $100 million a week.
Huh.
Chicago alone.
Yeah.
See?
Unbelievable.
And Carlos Thomas Gambino, right? He was making $55 million a week.
Huh.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Joey Genovese was making $100 million a week.
Mm-hmm.
And when Vegas opened up, Joey Genovese down there, along with my grandfather, and then of course, what's his name? Off track, you know what I mean? But
yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll help you along here, and I'm sure. You know, I wanted to say this, and then I'm sure Eric has a couple questions before
Bugsy,
we get into
Bugsy Siegel, and
okay.
He was part of the Vegas, and they used his money and my grandfather's brains.
Yeah, so they used the Jews' money
right.
And the brains of the Sicilians. Right?
And that's why the Twin Towers was so powerful, because they were backed by the syndicate too. And there was nothing but Jews working in the Twin Towers, because they controlled the money in the United States. Every Jewish business, when they make their money, they send all their money out of the United States back to their own country. And that's why Hitler went against the Jews, because he needed money for power in Germany, and they were taking the money out of Germany and sending it back to Israel.
Well, of course, there was no Israel at the time, but I guess my question to you, Tony, is,
and there is a Jewish mafia that works along with the Sicilian mafia. Yeah, if you want to be a full-blooded Sicilian like me, you are part Greek, part Italian, and part Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back in the days of the Caesar of the Roman Empire. They used to take the Greeks off of the island of Sicily, which were the Sicilians, and put them in the arenas and made them gladiators to kill one another. We were the world's first slaves. But
tell us about Jimmy Hoffa, Tony.
Jimmy Hoffa. Okay. Jimmy Hoffa was a beautiful union organizer for the truckers when he first started out. And then there was a young snot-nosed punk who was on crack cocaine by the name of John Gotti. Well, he turns John Gotti into a truck hijacker. That's all John Gotti did, was smoke crack and hijack trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day, a truck was coming up from Florida, and it had a $5.5 million load on it, and it was coming to Nicky Scarfo in Atlantic City.
What was on the truck?
Huh?
What was on the truck?
What was on the truck?
Yes.
Nicky Scarfo started to through Giuseppe and Giovanni Gambino in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. They started supplying the Eastern Seaboard with cocaine and heroin. And my grandfather didn't want this crap because he said when it first came into effect, coke was always on the scene. So was heroin. But all that stuff was hidden because it was a rich man's high. Your district attorneys used it. Your judges used it. Politicians used it. It was a rich man's high. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that's where it started at. And the government got involved because the government will not stop the drug wars, and they will not stop drug coming into the United States. What they do is they get these cheap-ass drug dealers, and they pop them once in a while on the streets. But the big dealers and the people who supply them, they keep on letting that stuff come in because they're making money off of it, too.
So it was a truckload of cocaine or heroin that John Gotti hijacked then?
Okay. And John Gotti hijacked this truck. And he wasn't, and through a mistake of Jimmy Hoffa, this truck got hijacked. All right? And Jimmy Hoffa was supposed to make John Gotti make that load good, but he never did. And he had X amount of days, X amount of time to do this. Right? Even if he had to go and order some stuff and bring another truckload up to replace what was stolen. Okay? So what happened was Jimmy Hoffa, he didn't, anytime somebody owes money, they're supposed to give a courtesy call. And say, like, if you say you're going to, you owe $2 million, and you're going to say you're going to pay that on the 15th or the 30th of the month, okay? Now, if you're going to pay that on the 30th of this month, the 15th day you should have called or courtesy call and say, yo, I got X amount of dollars that I can give you, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But I will not be able to give you the rest on the 30th. I need more time. That would be accepted. But if you waste somebody's time to come down from over from Sicily or over from another state and have to go and see you to collect this money off of you, and you don't give no courtesy calls and you ain't got it, then they eliminate you. And Jimmy Hoffa owed a lot of money. And he kept on bickering around. He gave a date. He went over that date, and he never came up with it. Jimmy Hoffa was placed in body bags in a limousine at the truck stop on 295 going towards Delaware on New Jersey. That was the last truck stop in New Jersey before you go over the Delaware Memorial Bridge.
Uh-huh.
On 295. There's a campground and everything down there.
And where did his body end up?
His body wind up alive in the highest embutment, the concrete embutment of the George Washington Bridge. And a guy who was pouring concrete up there had to jig it because it was a three slump. It was real nice and stiff. And this limousine went up over the bridge. The guy popped the lid to the trunk in the inside of the glove box. They got the live bag of garbage. They stuck him in the embutment. And then he jigged concrete, three slump concrete, down on top of the garbage. All right? And the guy who was pouring the concrete he got an envelope of $150,000.
So he's never said a word about it, huh?
No. No. See, yeah, they said the stadium was being built at the time, and they said either the stadium or the George Washington Bridge, but they didn't know. But that's where he's at. He's at the bottom of the highest abutment in the middle of the George Washington Bridge.
What happens to people, Tony? For example, when you talked about the Kennedy assassination, when you talked about Bush knowing about 9/11, when people want to really start talking that know about it, what usually happens to them? I mean, about Hoffa, I'm sure people knew about it. Has anybody you know been eliminated that may have got to the truth about any of these murders that we're talking about?
There was a few people that brought this out in the open, and they were paid to shut up, and some were and assassinated by the Kennedys themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when John Kennedy Smith, he raped that girl in West Palm Beach, Florida, and he got away with it at their estate. The Kennedy's father, my grandfather, always had a vendetta against the Kennedys because they was in the same business, bootlegging.
Mm-hmm.
The Kennedy family, for every bottle of scotch that comes in from Scotland into this country still today, the Kennedys get $1 off of each bottle.
They have income.
See? And that's how the Kennedy made their money. Bootlegging.
Right. Now, you spent some time away, and now you're back again. Is there any particular reason you're talking now? Are you worried about it, about coming forward with a lot of this stuff?
No, I ain't worrying about it because the United States government ought to be put down. You know what I mean? Because they're more crooked than the mafia. It's all nothing but one hand washing the other, and it's starting with the Pentagon, and it's working along with the, you know, the United States gave Bin Laden money, right?
Right.
Okay? Am I right or wrong?
Right.
All right. The United States gave Germany money.
Right.
To Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
The United States knew that the Japanese were going to bomb Pearl Harbor.
Right.
The Japanese ambassador was sitting right in the White House when it happened. Everybody's saying, oh, we ordered new planes. The planes were coming in to bomb Pearl Harbor. They said, oh, there are new American planes coming in. The United States allowed the Japanese to bomb Pearl Harbor.
Right.
So they can get in the war. And then Roosevelt in 1933, he bankrupts the United States because he gets involved with Germany. Germany didn't do anything to us. The United States government puts their noses in wars and in countries that they ain't got no business doing. I went to Vietnam. I put 4 years in Vietnam. I wasn't allowed to shoot in the rubber trees where these gooks were shooting at me. Richie Capizzi got loose with an M60 machine gun because he couldn't take it no more. And the tracers put some trees on fire, and he knocked some trees down. The United States government gave this man a life sentence because he couldn't take that he died. And
right.
All the rubber that them trees would make for 20 years.
Huh. Are you there?
Yeah. Are you there, Tony?
Tony, are you there? I think he got cut off. But anyway, Eric, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, well, let's continue on till we get Tony back on. I think somehow he must have hit the phone. Tony, are you there? Well, anyway, we'll get to, if we don't get, hopefully we'll get him back on. Eric, an incredible story, though, isn't it? That a guy like Tony Gambino, one of the inside, he's a made man, one of the top guys in the mafia. Tony, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you're back. We were just commenting, you were cut off there for a moment. I wanted to mention, today as we speak, the mob is still as strong as ever, working together with the CIA, working together with the Vatican?
Up in Sicily, yes.
Okay.
But not in the United States.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, most of the mafia in the United States now is nothing but big business.
Okay.
Okay? It's casinos, hotels, different types of companies that they invested in, just like Governor Ridge when he was governor of Pennsylvania. He was getting all this federal funded money to build prisons in Pennsylvania. But I like to know one thing. How did Governor Ridge turn around and put the Department of Corrections of Pennsylvania on the Wall Street on the stock market using federal funded money?
Right. So basically the mafia's turned into big business now.
That's correct, in the United States.
And the old system that you worked with is basically not functioning the same way on the streets, correct?
No, because, you take like these two punks that we had in Philadelphia, John Stafford and Joey Skinny Marino. Joey Skinny Marino started having shootouts in the afternoon in South Philadelphia. John Stafford, he tried to kill Joey Skinny Marino on the Benjamin Franklin Bridge. He had some guys go over there, Johnny Rosario. And he tried to have Johnny Rosario shoot at Joey Skinny Marino. As he was going over to Jersey, they were coming over to Philadelphia, and they're shooting on top of cars and everything at 12 o'clock in the afternoon trying to kill this guy on the Wobbling Bridge. Well, that's the same bullshit that Gotti was starting on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Kill the son of a bitch. He was trying to bring back the old days, but it didn't work. Just like little Anthony and Doug of the Junior Black Mafia in Philadelphia, down at 56 and Woodland Avenue, and Malcolm Barbershop. They were in there one day, and I happened to stop by, and they say, "Hey, Tony, John Gotti's on the phone." I said, "I don't talk to that maggot. I don't have nothing to do with John Gotti. He shot a 90-year-old man and made himself a made man by killing Paul Castellano."
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Carlos Thomas Gambino, he had 250 bookies on the street. For each one of them bookies, my grandfather used to get $150,000 from the top every month from all his bookies. Then they start getting $100,000. Then he start getting $75,000. Then he start getting $50,000. He said, "Well, what's the problem? Well, how come the money's getting lower and lower and lower?" He's saying, "Oh, my bookies are running out of customers. It's in the bathroom, mommy. Excuse me." So anyway, we turn around, and what I was talking about was he started skimming from the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go to him from Sicily, not as a father and son relationship, because we never had a father and son relationship. I never knew who my mother was that he had a relationship with. Before me, my grandfather ordered a boy. My mother had two girls. He forced her into having two abortions before he had me, because he wanted a boy to put the bond to having Carlos Thomas Gambino come into the crime family. That's the purpose why I was born, by ordering my mother, who was married to another gentleman, to have a relationship with Carlos Thomas Gambino to have a boy that my grandfather wanted to raise underneath him.
Okay. You know,
and
I wanted to ask
today,
you.
I don't know who my mother is, and I'm 64 years old.
Wow.
And nobody never told me who my mother was.
Hmm.
Just like my wife. I was married to Mary Rosati. All right? Now, Dominic Rosati, my grandfather went to him and said, I want your daughter to marry my grandson. Well, he didn't like that because he was a syndicate man, and he wasn't. He was an Italian, but he wasn't involved with the syndicate. So my grandfather gave him an offer he couldn't refuse and had that girl marry me through force. Okay? Now, I had three children with her. Now, in 1978, my father-in-law, he knew that I went and got the cars inspected. He knew I put the cars in the garages if they needed work. I took my wife's car to the garages. Well, I went one day to take the car to the garage, and my wife happened to be with her sister. And she had my three kids with her. They see, she seen her car in Joe's garage lot, and she stopped and had my sister-in-law drop her off, and she went and talked to Joe. She said, is my car done? He said, yeah. Well, Joe says, but you know Tony. He brings you guys around. They check the car. They make sure there's no car bombs. They make sure there's nothing wrong with the car. I had guys go around the car with mirrors. And open up the hood, open up the seats, look under the seats, look under the motor, anywhere possible that a bomb could be planted. Because I knew this guy didn't like me.
Mm-hmm.
And she put my three kids in the car. She went and sat in the car. She waved her sister off. She said, I'm going to take the car home. And she told Joe to give me a call. Right?
Mm-hmm.
As Joe was calling me on the phone, I answered it, and the car blew up with my three kids and her in it.
Oh, my God.
And that was the first time I was married, and that were the only three kids I had with being married. Hmm. And then I had two other girls in other different relationships, but I never got married.
Eric, we have about a minute or two, a couple of minutes. Do you have any final questions for Tony?
No, I just want him to confirm to the listeners that the mafia is essentially Roman Catholic and Sicilian at the top, right, Tony?
That's correct.
And that they are subordinate to the papacy.
That's right.
And therefore, ultimately, the source of all this drugs and crime and drug running of the mafia, the ultimate beneficiary is the Pope. Would you not say that?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Mm. The Pope is more powerful than the president.
Yeah, and what did you know about Cardinal Spellman? Anything? We got about a minute. Remember when he was around.
Well, you might as well say he was the godfather for the Catholic Church.
Yeah, they called him the American Pope.
Huh?
They called him the American Pope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was the godfather for the church.
Yeah. With heavy connections to organized crime, correct?
Yeah. And backed by the CIA and the FBI.
Hmm. Unbelievable.
Department, right?
You'd be surprised how much money the syndicate gave the government. When my grandfather was alive, every federal judge and every state judge was in his back pocket, district attorneys.
Tony Gambino, listen, we're going to have you on again sometime. We got a lot more to talk about. Thanks for being on the show.
Yes, thanks, Tony.
You're welcome, sir. It was an honor.
Okay, Tony Gambino.
Bye-bye.
All right. And Erica, thanks again for your appearance, and we'll have you on again. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Okay, that was Tony Gambino, Eric Scott-Phelps. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, on the Wisconsin Journal. Until then, good afternoon.